your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 11th of March, 2025, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. Okay, so I got a couple of stories I want to talk about, but let's do an open line today. I'll throw my stories in between when you guys call or text. Before we go on, I guess I want to address something that happened at the end of C.A. Newry's show yesterday. When I made a point, this is the point that I made that I really want to address, that yes, it is the host's responsibility to manage the mic and to control as best as possible what's said on the airwaves while they are in control of the mic. Like, that's the job, right? And hosts, at some point, are expected to take responsibility for things that guests say on the show, especially if the host makes no step or measure to moderate what the guest has said, right? Like, that's one of the responsibilities of the person that controls the mic. When I lose control of the mic, then the producer has a responsibility, right? A professional obligation to then take control of the mic to ensure that what is being disseminated over the airwaves is all good. So I made a point to the caller that, no, you can't call in and chastise me like that. It's my job, right, to chastise. In fact, so you could chastise me, but I can't chastise you. I said, no, you're absolutely right. That's how it works. That's not quite how it works. Well, see, if you're going to chastise me, make it funny. Make it engaging. Make it witty. You see, Hubert Minnis will be forever remembered for this phrase, mother's wit. Why? Because I wonder where he found the phrase from, because I'm not sure if he has ever found mother's wit. That's not the point. The point is, if you're going to call the airwaves to row the host, make it funny. Make it funny. Make it engaging. Make it clever. Just don't be downright rude and disrespectful. Well, that's it. Bring some mother's wit to it. You may not have noticed, some of you may not have noticed, but people call and chastise me all the time. They attempt to use mother's wit to do it. Some of them do it more subtly than others. So it's not a hard and fast rule. But just know, if you want to get away with chastising the host, then you got to be clever, savvy, smart, and funny. Now, there's a way to make a correction. That's not to say that a caller cannot call in or text in and say, hey, Green, you made a mistake. You were erroneous. You know, you don't understand that legal concept. You got a piece of it. You don't have all of it. You don't understand it at all. Those types of things are obviously acceptable. Right? But that's making a correction is not the same as chastising. Because we presume that a mistake was made inadvertently. Right? So I was saying, so you could call. You could call and row me. Plenty of people call and row me. But you want to engage effectively. You want to capture the attention of the host or the audience. Use a little mother's wit. That's all. See, that's the difference between Minnis and Davis. Well, the difference between Minnis and Davis and Ingram, Christie, and Sir Lyndon, right? In their leadership style, in their ability to engage the public, in their ability to engage a collective audience, right? So that's what performance is about. You have to capture the imagination of the collective and cause them to imagine along with you. Takes mother's wit to do that. And I think that in the realm of public life, a great assessment of it is the difference in leadership styles or public engagement styles between Davis and Minnis, and then on the other side of the bracket, Pendling, Christie, and Ingram. So yeah, man. You could call and row. The numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Family Island listeners, 242-300-5720. Text line powered by BTC, 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. I saw a statement yesterday from Long Island MP Adrian Gibson indicating that it feels like the PLP have abandoned Long Island, indicating that a number of major projects had groundbreaking ceremonies, but nothing has proceeded or certainly has been completed. And I thought that was a reasonable and sound thing to say, given the dive excursion company that hosted the annual dive competition at Dean's Hole, Blue Hole, Long Island, indicated that they were, at the very least, putting a pause on the program because of a lack of infrastructure they felt was necessary for the competition. How are things going in the Family Islands? Is the ministry responsible for Family Island affairs sufficiently resourced to be able to attend to the needs of Family Islands? We're seeing today's Tribune headline, Rise in Demand for Social Services Help. Social Services Minister Miles LaRota said there has been increasing demand for food, rental, and burial aid assistance. Quote, we are inundated would be the correct word with requests from, let me go to page 5. The sentence ends abruptly and continues on page 5, quote, we are inundated, would be the correct word, with requests from individuals due to the inflation crisis is going on all over the world, close quotes, he said recently in the House. He stressed the financial strain on the ministry, reporting that the Department of Social Services had spent $6.8 million on assistance in New Providence as of December 2024. This included $2.6 million for food assistance, $1.6 million for temporary accommodations and $731,000 for medical assistance. Quote, we do have genuine cases of individuals who are in need, and so we are working towards a system where receiving pension benefits or receiving a salary is not a disqualifier, he said. Mr. LaRota acknowledged that while assistance is available, it is not automatically granted. He emphasized that assistance is only available to those who meet specific financial criteria and that that is not guaranteed. So even if you meet the financial criteria, that's not a guarantee that you will be granted the assistance, the specific assistance that you applied for. Quote, what we found was that there have been people who were receiving social services assistance who are now back to work and fully employed. And that is part of the reason why individuals would have been taken off food assistance, close quotes, he said. Quote, notwithstanding, I receive messages and calls from the public and from MPs on both sides indicating that their situation is still dire. Notwithstanding that, they may be working because we do have a working poor, close quotes. He said his ministry has recommended increasing allowances for grocery items because of the financial distress nationwide. He also highlighted efforts to extend aid through grants, noting that $4.2 million in grants had been provided to various civic organizations as of December 2024. Quote, some of the grant recipients have expressed a need for additional funding outside what has been allocated, citing an increase in demand in the services that they have provided, close quotes. Quote, we cannot allocate additional funds at this time. However, we will make recommendations for increases in the 2025-2026 budget, close quotes. To ensure accountability, he emphasized financial reporting requirements for grant recipients. Regarding temporary shelters, Mr. LaRota acknowledged the challenges faced by the Department of Social Services, particularly at the Poinciana Inn, which became a full shelter in 2023 and has helped 489 individuals to date. Quote, the Department of Social Services has been inundated with requests for temporary shelter, he said. There are times when all of the designated facilities are filled to capacity or persons have not been able to successfully transition to independent living after being accommodated. He recognized the contributions of partners such as the Great Commission Ministry and the Salvation Army in providing additional support for temporary shelter needs, while also encouraging families to support each other. Efforts to improve rent assistance processes continue, with Mr. LaRota requesting patience from the public. Quote, some challenges still persist, particularly with rent assistance payments, but solutions are being sought to shorten the waiting time. And we request your understanding until the process is refined and resolved, close quotes, he said. It's a very interesting article, in particular the numbers. The numbers are startling. I'm not doubting the veracity of the numbers. I'm just startled at these numbers. So the article indicates that social services spent $6.8 million on assistance in New Providence as of December 2024. So we're talking, does it mean at the end of December 2024, at the beginning of December 2024? So we're going to count December. So we have December, January, February, and we're almost halfway through March. December, January, February. So that's 3.5 months the government has spent $6.8 million on assistance in New Providence. That's $2.6 million for food assistance, $1.6 million for temporary accommodations, and $731,000 for medical assistance. Over 3.5 months. Now, I am not arguing that that money should not be spent. My question is, are there ways in which we can reduce that expenditure? And I guess the first question to ask is this. Is it reasonable, is it ethical to require people who are receiving state assistance to participate in a temporary work program? Is it reasonable for people who are a part of the working poor? That means you're working, you have a job, you may have two jobs, and you still can't make ends meet, or you have two or three, well, or you're unemployed and you have no work at all. Would it be unreasonable to ask people who need temporary accommodations or emergency housing assistance, would it be reasonable to ask them to participate in a work program as a part of the assistance policy? Would it be unreasonable to open a temporary housing shelter that has, say, a wash house or a daycare or a food processing plant attached to it? So a part of your requirement for staying in the facility is that you dedicate 1 or 2 hours, maybe 4 or 5, depending on your level of employment, to the program. Because if we project the 6.8 million, let's call it 6.8 over 4, or let's just call it 7 over 4 months, 7 million on assistance over 4 months, that's 3/3, that's 1/3 of the year. So we're going to multiply 7 million by 3, that's $21 million. And then we ask the question, are there periods of the year when the amount of assistance required increases significantly, like in the summer? Right, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller.
Hey, Ms. Green. How
are
you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Quick question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of all these tariffs and how the world is going today, right?
Right.
With food prices and everything going up, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much percentage do you think that the working poor will be expanded by?
Boy.
And right, because what happened is, right, we have a housing crisis right now at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine by next year, we will be in some real problems. So I advise anyone, if you're about to get a house, I think you should do it by this year, because next year, I can guarantee you, whoever is in party, in government, more than likely, VAT probably will be going up based on the fact that that's the only way we know how to gain revenue in the Bahamas. No government has any creative ways on creating any form of other income than taxes. So taxes more than likely will be going up.
Yeah.
You don't have to necessarily quote me on this, but it's almost obvious if you look how the world is actually going today. With all the tariffs and all the rates and container prices going up, so obviously food would be going up.
Yeah.
Do you think that people should try their hardest if they are to get a house to get it within this year?
Oh, boy. I mean, that's a good idea, but I think that what's required also is a cultural shift. People need to seriously consider how they live now and the other models available to them. For instance, young people who want their own home, now may be the time to sit down with your parents and say, look, it seems unlikely or unlikely that I will be able to afford my own home in the next 10 years, in the next 5 years. Can we talk about a plan where either I rent and assist you with maintaining the family home, with the intention of you passing the family home down to me? And so my rent payments would be used to maintain the home, to repair it, right? The structural issues to ensure that we keep up on regular maintenance. That may be a model that we need to begin to employ. And then maybe we need to return to the African compound model, where a number of family members come in to purchase a larger piece of property, say 2 lots or 3 lots, with the intention of putting 4 families, right? Or 5 families on it. And so we're all sharing in the cost of the mortgage, the purchase of the property, which then reduces our expenditure, giving us more space to save or invest in constructing the home.
Okay, glad that you brought that aspect up, right, about the mortgage part, because I think that this is going to become serious in the matter that people are going to only be getting married, right, to get a dual income.
Can I tell you something?
Because, let me finish before you go, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I'm saying that is, right now, that all banks are asking for a certain amount of money in order to qualify for loan, mm-hmm. which means a lot of people actually don't qualify for it because you'll have to end up having a actually marrying someone or dating someone with a government job
mm-hmm.
or dating someone just to have a dual income in order to get a house mm-hmm. or a property, which I think is basically the wrong reasons for doing it. But realistically, that's actually what's going to happen.
Yeah. What I was going to say was that you are not off or wrong at all, because we only recently, 3 decades, four would take us to the 80s, 5 would take us to the 70s, maybe 5 or 6 decades have we been marrying for love. Most people marry for economics. Most people marry to build empires, right? And traditional marriage, when we look at older cultures, cultures with thousands of years of history documented, we see that arranged marriages were the tradition, and not everybody could afford to get married. Not every man had sufficient wealth to get married. Not every father had sufficient wealth to provide a dowry for the child, right? Like, he pays the dowry to them and they give it back. Anyway, the point is, you had to be of a certain economic status to be able to get married. The question is, if we take time to examine some of those, I can call for the moment, old practices or old world practices, right? Would we find examples and examples of things that may be helpful to us now in the present? You still there, caller?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Yeah.
Okay, before you go too, right?
Yeah.
I just want to add one more point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's sad that we're at a point in our lives now that we actually don't know or can't separate the difference between needs and wants.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a prime example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every Bahamian has to go to Miami at least 2 to 3 times a year. Is that a need or is that a want?
It's a, okay.
Nowadays,
it's a
want that new iPhone 17 will come out during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That costs $1,600. That's a need or a want.
That's a want. Unless,
but
hold on,
a lot of
hold
people
on.
Have that as a need.
Hold on. Unless you get it in a professional capacity, but still to your point, that is specific to the arts world, to creatives. Like Apple is a device, Apple is a brand for creative people. So I with you. I think a $1,600 iPhone is a want, because if it's a need, your business will pay for it.
Because I don't mean to down anyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of people in low income areas and catching the bus with a $1,600 phone.
Yeah.
That make it make sense.
Listen, I got another caller on the line, but I want to make it make sense, because you said so much just there. Let me get to the next caller, and then I'm going to get into that. Thank you so much, caller. Thank you very, very much. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
See, Alan Johnson here. Just let me say, for that caller just called, right? Every Bahamian don't go to Miami, and every Bahamian don't spend the way we think. And I don't like where we adopt this position to use all and every Bahamian. Like, you know, every Bahamian goes to Miami to have babies. Every Bahamian puts on their seatbelt in Miami, you know, with no data to have it. And I'm going to come back to that same word, no data to support it.
Okay.
If we look at, as you talk about housing, I've been talking and warning about this for 10 years, saying that by 2025, we will face a housing affordability crisis. Listen to me carefully. This is different. We do not have a housing crisis in the Bahamas. we have a housing affordability crisis in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a distinct difference between the two. If we look at the requirements to for home ownership, and let's use the prime rate of 4.5% right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use even the DTI, the income ratio of say 35%,
mm-hmm.
you would need to earn $54,652 per year to buy a $200,000 government home. If you use the standard that the banks want to use, you would have to earn $76,536 to buy a home, a $200,000 government home.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the concept and the mortgage corporation
mm-hmm.
and what government is saying they're trying to do is just exasperate the situation, because you're creating an environment where individuals are not making this type of income, so they can't sustain it. And understand this, this amount I'm giving you is without insurance, without the life insurance, and other things that is required.
You have to pay VAT on all of that too?
Yes. But don't have to, you could, they waive that. They waive that.
Okay.
But the mere fact I'm saying is that when you know, the bank requires you to keep a life insurance, the bank requires you to keep home insurance on the property. So this just raises the whole level. And so this is why we need to have a sensible strategy. And I don't know if you watch Parliament. One of the things that was said by the leader of opposition concerning land banking and the need to build these 12,000 homes, if we understood the power of what he has said, that should have been front page headlines.
Send me a clip.
I'll send you the clip. But
okay.
the second part of that goes back to the fact that the prime minister is in the process of this blame game of looking backwards. I understand that he is cemented in the past and the denial of the future. Success is how well you have done based on what you're capable of doing, not as well as you have done based on how bad somebody else done it. We're still in trying to rebuild to the level we were pre-COVID. So, you know, it's a natural process for us to begin to snap back. But when we begin to twist data to try to make a point about increase in employment, low unemployment, whatever, it stops us from being focused on what we have to achieve and building a sustainable, inclusive opportunity and ownership economy. And so, you know, we have not reached the pre-COVID numbers that we had before. So any level of we have grown and whatever else without the context is simply misleading.
Mm-hmm.
So it says that you cannot manage what you cannot measure, and you cannot measure what you refuse to acknowledge. And if we are to be competitive in this new global digital reality of the new world order that is occurring, then we must be data-focused, data-centric, and plan not just for the next election, but 5, 10, 15 years in advance with implementable plans and strategies, not harvested ideas that is pirated first, and then pirated by our leadership as if though they found some holy grail. We need to stop pretending to be a country. We need to stop pretending to govern and move into the reality of the now, or we will find ourselves, we had a conversation, I think, last week, moving from the failing country into a failed state.
Country. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, C. Allen Johnson. So I want to link what C. Allen is saying back to the earlier caller and this idea of the iPhone, $1,600 iPhone. You're right, C. Allen, not everybody goes to Miami. But here's a thing I think that is real or is authentic or valid, is that we are spending far too much money intended for collective national development on disposable individual experiences. Ma'am? On disposable experiences. And one of those, I think, is we travel. It's an individual experience. But we travel to do things that we could do in our own country. Ma'am? It's like you travel to do things that you cannot do at home. But we travel to go and do things that you could do in your own country. Now, before I just drop it and people think that I'm bashing, a lot of our spending is about psychological issues, right? Like, we spend money to make ourselves feel better. We buy things to give ourselves a sense of empowerment, right? And if we are solving psychological and emotional issues with money, or attempting, because you can't solve psychological and emotional issues with money. If we are attempting to solve them with money, then that's the space that is problematic. But yeah, you know, I want to say to young people, a $1,600 phone is a mortgage payment and a rent payment, right? If a $1,600 phone is important for what you do, your company would pay for it. Yeah. Here's a text. Good morning, Aaron. I remembered when I was on the program years ago, it went hand in hand with the Department of Labor. So I think they mean the Housing Assistance Program. I'm not sure if it's still that way, but I had a blue card to go to the Department of Labor to get it stamped every month to say they didn't have any jobs available in my field before I go to social services to collect a food stamp. That's a good system. Texas says, I love that idea, Aaron. But let's sell it. Let's sell it. Let's sell it to whoever will buy it. Whoever have a wash house, let's sell it to them. Whoever in our country has the resources to build buildings and make them available for government use. When you build in this next building, make sure that you have a small kitchen and storage and wash house attached. Put some solar on it so that the people who apply and are granted access also can participate in a temporary employment program to support their transition back to self-sustainability. As a text, hi, Aaron, the government needs to get out of providing homes. Instead, they need to partner with private entities that can build projects that provide more social housing, and that may even mean high-rise projects. Texter, I am agreeing with you. I think the government should not be building homes. The government should be creating programs and the environment in which they can partner with private enterprise. Producer, let's prep this caller. Partner with private enterprise, right? And we're going to get back to that text in a moment. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good. I hope I don't put a switch on your topic.
No, man, we good,
But I must speak about BPL.
Go on.
I was in BPL for less than an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Ms. Green, whatever they're doing, they got to keep it up.
Okay, let's talk.
This is the first time from I was paying bill,
mm-hmm,
I ever could have paid my light bill in full.
Okay.
Owe them nothing. Whatever they're doing is working.
So you're saying that the cost of electricity, your bill has gone down?
Down.
Okay.
Tremendously down. And I must call, because when it's high and when things go wrong, we call the talk shows and complain.
Mm-hmm.
But I must comment BPL today and the minister.
All right.
Whatever they're doing, it was it.
Okay.
Now, I hope they don't try to do something when summer come up and we start using these air conditioning things.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I must commend Ms. Jobert Colby Davis and the staff at BPL.
Okay.
I'm happy. I am happy today. I get go buy my own pig feet now.
I got you.
I get change.
I got you. Okay.
God bless.
God bless. Aye for that, man. Aye for that. Now, we want to see the working, right? We want to see you show us how you were able to provide electricity at this rate for us and that there's no payment on the back end. Let's go to the next caller, producer. Coming to you right now, caller. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green. How you doing?
I am good, thank you. How you do?
Yeah, I'm all right here in the struggle, but thank God, you know, I don't really worry with bills. I just pay them, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, you know, consumption would be down in this cold, in this type of weather, you know, we're not burning the ACs, et cetera, but I'm afraid that there are certain people who call talk shows, right, Ms. Green?
Mm-hmm.
And they never side with the people. They're always siding with the politicians and the status quo and those in the know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very frightening for me in the fact that most imbeciles should know that in order to be a good citizen, it's not to be overly obedient or blindly obedient to a political party.
Mm-hmm.
You should stand with the people and you give credence when it's necessary. So let's relate to the old PM and this back and forth psychological operation between him and the current PM, right? When the status quo narratives were being passed during the pandemic, you know, doctors were the be-all of truth. And only the mighty God is the master of truth, right? And so some are giving this information as it relates to the vaccine efficacy threshold. That's about everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if one was to really look at a lot of things, you would find, I mean, there was 300,000 pages, like I told Mr. Strawn. I read less than 300, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, we were being duped. Nobody came and apologized to us about the disinformation, the misinformation, the deception. But on the plantation, you don't question anything. Everything remains the status quo biblical narratives. And that's frightening for me as a citizen. So what I'm saying is, like, remember the fact checkers and all these different things and all the misinformation, disinformation they was giving us? That really didn't prove anything. Nobody apologized to Beeman Bieber about lying about the efficacy of the vaccine and the cycle thresholds or the PCR tests and all these different things. And the transmission dynamics. I could go on and on, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody apologized. Nobody came. But yet still, we saw the breach in trust of the status quo. But we continue along this line to be blindly obedient to everything that is passed on to us as it relates to science. And most people are so ignorant, they don't even know about the concept behind scientific dictatorship, where a doctor or a psychologist slams something on the table, and that's gospel. You know, it's frightening for me. I'm just saying. I'm just expressing myself. Bless him, yeah.
Thank you, 52. My 52, I have an article here. When I saw it, I thought about you. I'm going to read it today. I'm going to get back to the text line. The text says, got to disagree, Aaron. Personally, I think money can solve most issues that most people have most of the time. Only if they use it with sense, though. You know, money is a temporary fix. It's not a solution, right? It's like the patch on the tire versus getting a new tire. Right? You could afford to keep patching it. But until there are more tires available in the country, you can't buy a new tire. And I think that's a big thing because we have over decades resorted to solving problems with money, not realizing you can't solve it. You can only patch it temporarily, right? And I think the government is a perfect example of that, right? Attempting to solve problems with money. But I agree with you, I agree with you though, that most people, when they are solving problems with money, they're not actually using critical interrogation. There's another text. If his bill is down, the bill for 100% of home energy bills will be down as all of us pay the same rate. Okay, and so Texter, have you seen a reduction in your bill? Right, have you seen a reduction in your bill? And then taking into account a reduction in consumption as well, right? Have you seen a significant reduction in your bill? All right, so here's the article I wanted. I prepared for today. Commissioner of Police, brutality happens, but sometimes exaggerated. Police Commissioner Shanton Knowles believes concerns about police brutality are sometimes exaggerated, though she acknowledged that instances of excessive force sometimes do occur. She was speaking on RTV's On the Record with Jerome Sawyer, and Commissioner Knoll said police must use, quote, just enough force, close quotes, to detain someone. She noted that officers receive ongoing training to understand justifiable force's limits. All right, I want to go to the first sentence. See, let's go to the headline. Brutality happens, but sometimes exaggerated. Sounds kind of like a deflection, right? Commissioner believes concerns about police brutality are sometimes exaggerated. Okay, so I want to make this point here. There's a difference between claims about police brutality are sometimes exaggerated and concerns about police brutality are sometimes exaggerated. I'm going to presume that the commissioner misspoke when she said concerns about police brutality are sometimes exaggerated. I'm going to continue reading from the article. Quote, sometimes I do believe that people sensationalize the actions of police officers, close quote, she said. Quote, we are required to use just enough force to detain someone. If someone forcefully resists, we are required to subdue that person without using excessive force, close quote. She said officers are regularly reminded of the appropriate use of force in handling firearms. Quote, we continue to talk to our officers on every shift, close quote, she said. Quote, we educate them on justifiable force, the use of firearms, and policies. If they push the boundaries, they risk violating both our policies and the laws of the land. Close quotes. Okay, so a couple of points I want to make. I don't think that concerns about police brutality are exaggerated. We should all be desperately concerned about police brutality. Right? See, I have a feeling that we have missed a certain concept. The offense is breaching the line. There's a line. It's called, you call it policy and law. That's the line, right? The offense is breaching the line. It doesn't matter how far over the line your toe slides. It is still a heinous breach, right? So whether it is taking toilet paper out of the station bathroom to take home, or it is to start discharging your weapon in an extrajudicial killing. It doesn't matter. It is the breaching of the line that is heinous, right? Because if your concerns about police brutality are sometimes exaggerated, what do you mean? Any breach is heinous. And I think that's an important point to make. The second point I want to make, sometimes, quote, sometimes I do believe that people sensationalize the actions of police officers, quote, we are required to use just enough force to detain someone. If someone forcefully resists, we are required to subdue that person without using excessive force. Over the many years that I've been on the radio having these discussions, we've been faced with callers calling in to indicate, and I remember this specifically, like, Ms. Green, you're wrong. Police officers are trained in a particular way. Let's be honest. If a suspect does not have a gun, is the use of a gun excessive force? Here's a text. How does she explain the amounts of officers before the courts? She is no different than Miss Skippings. Well, I mean, she's entirely different from Miss Skippings, eh? First of all, she's entirely different from Miss Skippings. I just think that perhaps the commissioner has underestimated the extent to which people expect a shift in police language, in the police rhetoric, and police behavior. I'm going to continue reading quickly. Quote, we educate them on justifiable force, the use of firearms and policies if they push the boundaries and the laws of the land, close quote. Nonetheless, Commissioner Knowles said some people are abusive toward officers and expect them to be, quote, superhuman, close quotes. She stressed that officers come from the same communities as the public and share similar values. Okay, do we expect police officers to be superhuman? Yes. Simple. That's the answer. Yes, we do. Because they've volunteered to assume a higher role in society. That's it. Police officers, they swear an oath to take on a greater role than the citizen in society. They swear they're going to be more than just human. That they are going to be superhuman. In their capacity as police officers, the question is, does the force provide officers with the resources necessary to take care of the human side of themselves when they're doing the superhuman work? Let's go to the phone line quickly. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning to my beloved Bahamas. Aaron.
Yes, sir.
I want to know if they ever rewarded Sergeant Campbell yet for busting that King Air with over 1,200 kilos of cocaine in October 2021.
I do not know, but thank you for asking.
And why Inspector Gates still on the police force?
There you go.
Have a nice day.
Thank you very much. I also appreciate the background music. I hope the audience understand what you're doing. Thank you very much, caller. Right? I had another story in my notes, but I took it out. It is the story where a number of police officers are going to the courts over a number of matters like retirement. They're questioning the policy as to determine who is retired early and who isn't. I pulled it off my notes today, but there's something in that article that struck out to me, and it was someone had indicated that perhaps the Police Staff Association was not advocating sufficiently for police officers, and I just wanted to know, when did this Police Staff Association become a union? Right? Because, like, is it the Constitution? I'm not sure. You could correct me. If I'm wrong, says that police officers can't form a union. They cannot unionize. So, and then everybody says that the Police Staff Association is not a union. But why is it that the Police Staff Association is doing things that unions do? And people have an expectation of it to operate in the way that unions do on behalf of its members. Yeah, I just wanted to stick that pin. Thank you, caller. The reason I was reading the article as a follow-up to this Commissioner Police story is I was just wondering if they were agitating for some other things. I'm remembering Mr. Wayne Monroe, Minister of National Security, indicating in another had approached him, indicating that they are, you know, they are prepared to leave or they are concerned about continuing in frontline policing. This was in the midst of the return of the coroner's court. So I wanted to see, well, what were those officers agitating for? I was just hoping that they were not advocating for the right to say, I was in fear of my life. That's why I shot the suspect with no gun. I just wanted to check. Anyway, Commissioner of Police, brutality happens, but sometimes exaggerated. Right? I really wanted to read this article because I think perhaps our perspectives are wrong. It's almost as if the commissioner thinks like we have a right to rough up people, and sometimes you all just exaggerate it because you don't understand it. But that's not quite how it works. Force is only to be applied when it is necessary, and the level of force applied must be justifiable. To say that sometimes concerns about brutality are exaggerated. No. No. And I realized earlier I was conflating corruption and brutality. slapping a young boy in the back of his head while he's downtown with his shirt pulled out his pants because he's not standing to attention in your mere presence is police brutality. Yucking boys them off the bus because they're being a bit unmannerly in your presence is police brutality. Cussing at little boy them and girls them and people them is police brutality. Like, let me give you an example. Some days when I'm heading home, I come through town and I use Elizabeth Avenue to get to Bay Street. And I have great difficulty exiting Elizabeth Avenue onto Bay Street because a number of people just hang out in front of the establishment on the southwest quadrant of that intersection. They just hanging out. They just chilling. I mean, throughout the day, every time I pass there, the view of Bay Street is blocked because of the number of people. Sometimes it's tourists moving through, but a lot of the times it's just people hanging out there, right? How is it that those people could just hang out there, but young people moving through the place are loitering? Right? The people are actually causing an obstruction. They're actually causing a problem. Y'all don't say nothing. Y'all don't do nothing. You find some young men sitting on the corner after school or after work, and then you feel a need to tell them they must disperse. They got to go find something to do. Don't make us come back here. So you don't think about it as police brutality, but it is. You don't apply it evenly to everyone. Anyway, I wanted to read that. Here's a text. The police on a large scale is overweight, just my opinion. That's a big factor. Oh, we had the end of the hour. Hey, producer. Well, thank you very much. Texter, that's a big factor, right? Are officers using excessive force because they are physically unable to subdue or detain suspects on their own? Last text agreed, but if the country full with tires, but you just can't afford none, then you're stuck. Sorry, that negative idea mindset about money is a pet peeve for me. Not meaning you in particular, by the way. It's not a negative idea mindset about money itself. It's about the idea is that we have been pulled into a construct where those who are responsible for providing solutions refuse to. And so people are left to resort to money to solve problems that cannot be solved with money. So they must only be temporary fixes, eh? That's the issue that I have. I want to thank the texters. I want to thank the callers. Good day. Not sounds like deflection. It is deflection. Anyway, y'all listen to this sweet new Bahamian music. That's two new songs I hear in today. Thank you, producer. You guys have a great day. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri is up next.
Hey, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means you got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you on?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, Sino.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I wait?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then if you get the pen from them, and you can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.